Hi, this is Robert Kiyosaki, and you're listening to Capital Hacking. This is the most important thing you can listen to today.
I have a dream.
With great power comes great responsibility.
I can do this all day.
Zip, don't get scared now.
They may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom.
Cinderella's story, out of nowhere.
It's in the hole.
That the only thing we have to fear.
Welcome back. There's a big show ahead of you. My name is Josh McCallum. John Edwin, make it big.
Oh, Josh, you didn't give us that tomahawk, that famous
no.
Welcome back.
Got to jazz it up a bit here.
Big show.
It's a new year, brother. It's a new year.
It is a new year. I kind of like it, though. I don't know that we're ready to move on from that. So, guys, today we interviewed Phil Boggia. He is a very, very interesting guy because he started out for many years in law enforcement. He was a U.S. Marshal for almost 8 years, and then he worked Homeland Security for a number of years. And I don't want to steal any of Josh's thunder, so I'm just gonna pass it right.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, we're gonna take away from here some. There's several takeaways. We're gonna learn the triple net lease. Or the triple net real estate investing strategy. He's going to explain it in detail. If you haven't heard of it, great. That's why we do these teases. Number two, he's going to explain a principle called podcasts are dangerous. And I think what is so curious about this is there was a time, John, where we used to call this an audio mastermind because these are dangerous. You enter into new mental maps, new ways of thinking, new mindsets. And he talks about his journey and how it made him very wealthy because he chose to enter into these types of audio mastermind. Spoiler alert, guess which one of his favorite shows was when he was journeying? Capital! Welcome
back. The big show.
I tomahawked on that one. So podcasts are dangerous. We're going to get into that. And then he's going to teach you what Robert Kiyosaki's ultimate secret was from Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and how on top of listening to Capital Hacking, what else made him rich? This one element of the Rich Dad, Poor Dad book. He's going to teach that too. You're going to love this episode.
Let's go.
Well, it is exciting to have Phil here, isn't it, John?
We are ecstatic. And we were just having a really great conversation with Phil that we're going to share with you guys, our listeners. And to get rolling, Phil, can you give us a little bit of your background and what you're up to?
Yeah. So I was in... first, I'm married. I have my wife. I have two boys, almost 2 years old, almost 4 years old. And then I have one on the way. So I'm slowly catching up to Josh. But
you'll never get there. You'll never get there.
So I was in federal law enforcement for 14 years. I was with the U.S. Marshals for 8 years and then Homeland Security for 6 years after that. When I was working for the Marshals, I had a supervisor at the time who was a real estate investor, and he told me to read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. So I read that book, had a huge impact on me, and I started investing in small multifamily properties. And then I ended up partnering up with my dad. We started buying, slightly larger properties. And then from there, I discovered net lease, triple net lease properties. I hooked up with Joel Owens on Bigger Pockets, and he helped me transition out of the residential properties into some triple net properties. And then, so once I was talking with Joel, that's when I knew that's really what I wanted to do. So I ended up working for free for Joel for a period of time and ended up turning that into a full-time job. So
there's so much there, John, if you don't mind me asking. Working for free, let's start there for a second. I want to come back to working for free because that's curious. No one would ever think to do that. 99% of the people would never think to do that. But let's go back to life at the beginning. So Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you're a U.S. Marshal. How did that make an impact on you? Like, what about it?
So my supervisor at the time... this was during a time period where they were talking about putting government employees on furlough.
Oh my gosh, that's surprising.
My supervisor said to me during that time, because everyone was, upset about that. He said, it doesn't matter to me because I make more money from real estate than I do from this job. So that was like, I didn't understand that. That made no sense to me. So I was trying to talk to him about it. And he wouldn't talk to me until I read the book, Rich Dad Poor Dad. He kept turning me away because he said he tried to talk to a lot of guys and they kind of waste his time and nobody does anything. So he wanted me to read the book. So it took me a lot of time. Finally read the book and it changed my life. So he helped me buy my first two family. And it just went from there.
You know, what you just said is, I mean, it's so exciting and it's also so doable for a lot of people who want to get into real estate. And as many of you know, I ran a personal training business for 20 years. And it was, you know, only a couple years into it where one of my clients was telling me how she was making money in her sleep and didn't have a real job. And like you, it blew my mind. Mm-hmm. And that sparked me to buy my first one and then the next one and the next one. And, you know, like your supervisor, I started making more money in real estate than I was in my personal training business and ended up now retired from that. But that is so much. So with Rich Dad, Poor Dad, how long did it take you from reading that book to purchasing your first property?
It was probably like, so I read the book and then I decided, all right, I'm going to buy real estate. So I think I just went down the rabbit hole of like YouTube, Bigger Pockets, podcasts. Like I would just really want to learn as much as I could. It's probably like 8 or 9 months of that before just like, you know, pulling the trigger on my first two family.
Yeah, that's pretty fast. It's pretty fast. And thank you, Mr. Marshall, for mentoring Phil. But yeah. Phil, so you're U.S. Marshal, by the way, for me who's naive, what is the task, the typical law enforcement task of a U.S. Marshal?
So the marshals cover anything that's related to federal courts. So anything from, trials to prisoner transport to fugitives, Supreme Court justice protection details, witness protection program. So it's a, you know, there's a lot of different things in there.
All right. And then, the arc of your story gets all the way to triple net. Now we're going to ask you to be a professor and help us using your own life. Show us what is triple net. This is a very fancy term to most people. Yeah. I mean, most people understand renting a house to a family. Mm-hmm. That's called owning a rental, but what is triple net and how did it show up on your radar? Why are you doing that now?
So, it showed up on my radar because, I had an 8-unit building in New Jersey, and even though I had a management company, I had shootings, there was fires, every week I was having some sort of issue. I thought it was going to be an 8% return, ended up being like a 3% return. You know, it was just very management intensive for me. So just as I was researching and going on Bigger Pockets, listening to podcasts, I just eventually discovered, you know, triple net lease properties. So I started looking at those, and then I came across different brokers that helped people buy them. I talked to a whole bunch of them, including Joel, and ultimately went with Joel because I think he is the leading expert in that space.
But you, if you don't mind, for those no listener left behind here, let's break down what the three N's are. And, you know, teach it like we had never heard it before, if you don't mind.
Yeah, yeah. So triple net is, taxes, insurance, and property level maintenance. So if you have an absolute triple net lease, the tenant takes care of everything related to the property. So if you have a mortgage on the property, the only thing you're responsible for is paying your mortgage. And then, maybe updating some financials to a lender, but it's as passive as real estate can get.
So compare that, John. Would you mind teach us a little more? Because, I mean, I think we want to flesh this out. Compare that to renting a building. Like, what are the three N's again? John, go ahead.
If you own a house, for example, you're going to be responsible for property level maintenance, right? So toilets or termites, some sort of, repair, issue is going to be on the landlord and the owner. The owner or the landlord also pays for the taxes and the insurance on the property. With a triple net lease property, all of those expenses are on the tenant. So the tenant is on an absolute triple net lease is going to be responsible for the roof, everything. Any sort of issue or repair that comes up is going to be on the tenant, as well as the taxes and the insurance.
Yeah, so Josh, that was actually one of the questions I was going to ask. My second one, because you were talking about the 8-unit building where you had shootings and fires, and look, any landlord that has enough units for enough time is going to run into these situations. But an 8-unit building wouldn't be a triple net lease. That would be a residential lease. So if someone's looking to purchase triple net investments, could you explain, just clarify what a triple net investment looks like? I have an idea because I've rented triple net before, but I would love to hear it from you.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're going from a residential property to a triple net property, you know, it's just the management of the property is completely removed, right? So, for example, I had from that 8-unit building, I went into a Walgreens in South Carolina. So I actually hadn't even been to the property. So that was a property that Joel had found for me. It was on a hard corner, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And I just made sure that the rent was coming in, and that was it.
Pretty cool. Now, that sounds expensive, by the way, a Walgreens.
Yeah, it took me about 8 years of investing directly myself and as a limited partner, and just saving up cash flow, saving up that money, and just to eventually 1031 exchange out of my residential into a net lease property.
Yeah, what is the basic economics? Would you mind using that as a case study? What does it cost to buy a building? How much debt can you put on it, and those types of, and how much rent can you get a year from that?
Yeah, so that was in 2019, I think I bought that, or 2020. And so it was a $5 million purchase price. And I got, my interest rate at the time was like 3.5%. And I bought it at a 5.5 cap. So about 10 months later, Walgreens and CVS properties, those cap rates compressed pretty dramatically. So I ended up selling it for a 5 cap. So that was it. That 50 basis point compression was a $500,000 gain. So it made sense at that point for us to 1031 exchange into another property. And that property was another property that Joel had found for me, which is a brand new construction, 4-unit triple net lease, multi-tenant retail strip center.
And what types of tenants are in that new one, that new construction property that you're talking about? And also, what's the typical length of time for these triple net leases?
So these, the four tenants are all corporate tenants. So one of them is One Medical, which is owned by Amazon. Another one is Appliables. And then another franchise called Clean Eats. And then a flower franchise called Ober's Flowers. So they're all on 10-year leases, triple net, with fixed increases every 5 years.
Yeah, that makes sense. That we were on a 10-year lease when I had my fight gym there. So can we go backwards just a little bit, because we sped up really fast from reading Rich Dad Poor Dad to starting to buy, you know, small multi units to jumping into a Walgreens. So how many units did you buy personally before partnering with your father, and then how many units did you guys buy before the Walgreens?
So I personally bought a 2-family first, had that. And then I, about a year or two, that was in like 2015. So about a year or two after that, I was getting a lot of interest on solicited offers. So I had purchased the property for $226,000. I put $60,000 down, and, you know, I was getting offers that were like well over $300,000. So that, you know, I was talking to my dad about it. My father had been involved, you know, a long time ago in some development deals. So it kind of, you know, he hadn't really been involved in real estate, you know, within you know, the recent past. So he, you know, became interested. We started talking about it. So we ended up partnering on an 8-unit building. So, you know, that was a good time because real estate was kind of on that upward trajectory. So, once we realized we wanted to get into net lease properties, we just kind of partnered together into the net lease space.
Yeah. Yeah. John, you're doing a great job of helping us understand this because I'm listening as if I'm driving, right? As always. So we used to joke in the early years, we would talk about how everybody got a Tesla back then, you know, back when we first started the show. And so we would say, don't worry, take out your pen and paper. The car's going to drive for yourself. Let's take some notes, my brothers and sisters. But I do think this is a revolutionary show for us. I know Phil's saying, you're saying a lot of simple things, saying them simply, but I think they're new to many of us. All right. So to be the listener for a minute, you know, we've all come to grips with real estate. We think of it in terms of tax savings because we own a business that's going down or a building that's going down in value, but we're getting cash. We understand debt on a building like a house. We don't quite, not all of us know what you meant by cap rate compression. So we're going to get back to that. But we also, we can barely even picture what you're describing. I have to admit, I worked in a development group that had one property that was triple net. So I have some hands-on knowledge of it. But, you know, this is where it gets really interesting. A lot of people use these to buy when they have a 1031 exchange, right? Because they want to get out of managing a multifamily themselves and really step back. And so they take their tax situation, the good situation they had on the multifamily, use that 1031 tax strategy where you don't have to pay the tax as long as you place it in another piece of real estate that qualifies and that it happens within a short window of time. There's all these rules, but it's manageable. Is that, first of all, did you 1031 into all of your properties? Sounds like you sold one, made money, put it into another one.
Yeah. So the 8-unit building was a 1031 exchange into the Walgreens, and then the Walgreens sale was a 1031 exchange into the strip center. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So you've been able to avoid tax hits by making these sales, which is smart.
Correct.
Otherwise, you would have had a pretty bad tax hit on that income.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
But you've kept it in real estate. Now you're building an empire, it looks like, and you're getting bigger and bigger, and you want to have investors join you. But go back to the day-to-day. So when you bought the $5 million property, how much deposit ratio did you have to come up with?
So that was, we put down 30%. So the sale from our 8-unit building was 30% down. Yeah, so
you had that much money. You had $1.5 million in cash, if I did that right. And then you got a 3% loan. So all in all, you're charging the Walgreens Corporation how much rent per year?
So they were paying, it was kind of a unique situation because the current owners of the property had negotiated a longer lease term with the Walgreens in exchange for lower rent, because a lot of these leases were written 25 years ago. So this was a 25-year lease on Walgreens. So the rent that they agreed to pay for those 25 years ended up being significantly above market rent by the time we were looking to buy it. So Walgreens had approached the landlords about a rent reduction, and they had successfully negotiated a longer lease term in exchange for market rent. So in that situation, I was actually capturing a year worth of that higher rent before the rent reduction. It was kind of a unique deal in that sense. So I was able to collect about a 9.5% cash on cash return.
That's cool. That also adds another layer of sophistication. I'm just trying to create like a little economics one sheet for people as they're listening, because they're driving. They're probably driving extremely fast. I don't know. John, do you drive fast? I don't drive that fast, actually.
No. I don't ever drive fast.
I try to do speed control a little bit over the mileage. So for those listeners, I'm sure they're hard drivers, so they're all speeding. And we want them to have a visual, like a balance sheet in their mind. So 3.5 in debt, 1.5 in equity, but the rent each year would have been hundreds of thousands of dollars. What would it have been from Walgreens?
So it was, I could probably pull this up, but it was before the rent reduction, it was over 300,000. I think it was 350,000.
So let's just use that for a minute. And then the debt is running about, I just want to help them understand how much you're clearing. Do you see my point? 0.03 times 3.5 million. Is the interest each year is 105. The rest would be equity pay down. So you probably had about 105 in interest cost a year. So you're in the 245 range of free cash flow because you don't have any other bills. That's the other thing that people have to realize. There's not really a property management bill to anybody, right? In this case, you're the property manager for whatever it's worth. You're reading the documents, whatever that is, each month or year. So $250K off of a $5 million investment doesn't, you know, at first that doesn't sound like a good yield. I mean, it's all in all $5 million worth of capital went in, $250,000 worth of bottom line numbers. But you're saying that 245 represents a ratio over 1.5. So then you take, right, you take the $245,000 divided by 1.5, I think is how you do this. And it's like, am I doing that right, John, to come up with the right yield to see if this was worth his energy?
Yeah, it sounds correct. He said he was making, would you say 9.5% cash on cash? Is that what you said? Or
was yeah, it- so it was a 9.5%, right? So I had 1.5 million down.
It seems even lower, actually. Seems like we're losing more than that.
It sounds higher to me from the numbers you're doing, Josh.
I'm getting 16%. Am I wrong? I'm getting 16%. If you take 245 off of 1.5, you're doing pretty well. I could be wrong in how I'm doing that ratio, but all in all, it's what's interesting about it is you're theoretically buying an annuity. And I can see why somebody would do this because their assumption is Walgreens going to be there next number of more years. This is going to happen almost guaranteed for X number of years. Let's not get into whether or not Walgreens were to go bankrupt. Forget that for a minute. Let's assume everything's working and you're playing the game that you think inflation is going to push the value up. So even if your yield is small each year, is the game really the future compressed cap rate and a debt again, a new debt in the future? What is the long-term strategy when someone buys a triple net?
So Joel developed this concept he calls dirt first, right? So it's always the location first, followed by the strength of the tenant, followed by the lease terms. So a winning combination would be all three of those are strong, right? So for Joel, like for our syndication, for example, we want those three things to be lined up. Now that being said, we'll also look at, you know, a really great location where the tenant isn't so strong, but they're paying, say, half market rent. So the strategy there would be we could buy that at a high cap rate because the credit strength isn't there. But in the event that their lease term is up, we can win in two ways. It would be they stay and pay and we just keep collecting a higher yield, or they don't renew or go bankrupt before the end of that lease term. And then that way we can backfill that space at a higher rent per square foot and still be profitable after paying leasing commissions and attorney fees.
Yep. So that's called value add triple net is what you described. Very cool, right, John?
I like it. Location first, tenant strength, lease terms.
And when it's undervalued and you go to the bank, meaning it should be $100,000 a year on this small building, but it's only 70,000. And you're like, wow, they're $30,000 they're leaving on the table. So you go to the bank, they're only going to care about what it's performing, right? So they're only going to give you a ratio of the $70,000 lease, right?
Yeah. So with the syndication, we're purchasing all cash. So we're eliminating the debt maturity risk there. Just buying them cash to be more competitive. Because strong credit tenants in really great areas still have a lot of competition now, especially among REITs. So we have to come in with really strong terms in order to win these deals. So part of that is cash.
Got it.
Hi, this is Melanie McCallan. Josh and I are just so grateful for the many investors who already joined us at Accountable Equity. Accountable Equity is so much more than a capital group. It's really a community of accredited investors that want to learn and grow together. I just want to personally invite you, if you want to find out more about this type of investment and see if it's right for you and your family, please visit us at accountableequity.com. You can fill out the contact form. We'll get right back to you and see if this is a great fit for you and your family. We'd love to meet you. We look forward to learning about you. Please visit us at accountableequity.com.
Hey, it's Hal Elrod, author of The Miracle Morning, and you're listening to Capital Hacking. Enjoy.
Yeah, because the REITs may not want this thing because it's under rent. It's not, they call it stabilized. It hasn't reached its optimal rents, its optimal tenancy. Therefore, it's underperforming in that sense. Even though it's getting its rent every month, it's just underperforming for potential. So I feel like I've learned a lot on this, actually. What else surprises investors when you teach them about triple net, Phil?
I think investors that are coming from multifamily or just residential in general are used to higher yields, right? Like I think when they hear, you know, something is a six cap, right? Or, you know, 6% return, they don't like that. They think, well, I can get 12% doing a, you know, two family or, you know. So it's just really kind of where you are in your investment journey. So
yeah, that's a good point.
You know, well, it's like
real quick, I just want to interject though, because if someone's buying something at you're calling it a 6% on cash on cash. So we're not even, are you talking about a six cap or 6%? I'm trying to understand.
I just mean like a six cap, just okay, saying just okay. Okay, like, so eliminating, yeah, like eliminating. Okay,
so someone buys something at a six cap at a triple net, but are you explaining, because year after year, these rents go up and your, you know what I mean? Your costs don't, it's not like your taxes are increasing. You don't have to fix the roof.
Right.
So when I think that once you explain that to multifamily investors like myself, it makes a whole lot of sense. You know, how do you get there with them?
Well, and that's a great point. How do you get there with them? And are you saying your investment vehicle is 6%? But I'll let John's question, let's drill in on John's question. When a normal multifamily person says, wait, that's too low of a profile for me to make 6%, because you're only offering me back 6% of my 100 grand. Is what you're saying to me?
No. He clarified it's six cap, not necessarily 6% on cash on cash.
Yeah. So I mean, I guess it might be helpful with Joel's with Triple Net Invest, there's two focuses of the company. So you can work with Joel to buy a property directly, right? And I started as a client of his. And then we have the syndication side of the business. So in terms of owning a property direct, a lot of those people are coming over from residential properties in a 1031 exchange. So, you know, I think someone asked me, like, what are some of the objections with triple net? One of them is, you know, well, why would I take a, you know, 5 or 6% return? I'm getting more than that in my multifamily. It just depends if you want to keep managing that property, right? So that's why we're starting to build out this core plus strategy, because interest rates are high, it's difficult to borrow money and capture that spread between the cap rate and interest rate. So once we take down these deals cash, we can offer a higher yield with the safety and security of owning a triple net lease property. So we can pool that money together to buy these properties, because in the higher price point ranges, usually 5 million and up, 3/4 of those buyers are going to be using debt. So cap rates have expanded because of interest rates.
Right.
Whereas once you hit 5 million and below, definitely 3 million and below, 3/4 of those buyers are cash. So cap rates really haven't changed much there.
Okay. So interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunity in the higher price point triple net lease product.
So John and I made a promise, like an oath to our listeners, that we would keep it real and hilarious. Okay, so what we've just done is the keep it real portion. So now we have to dig into John. You know, John has a stand-up comedy show he does every weekend, And
yeah, me and Matt Donnelly, we do a impromptu show Saturday night, 11 p.m. at Renault.
At Renault. So, yeah, tongue in cheek there. But so John and I are about to shift gears, like boom, boom, you know. So phenomenal explanations of TripleNet. Thank you very much. But when John and I got you on the show, we really wanted to hear a couple crazy parts to your background. So in the intro, we teased that you would tell us how capital hacking fits into it. And I think you did the ultimate capital hack, which is this idea that you worked for someone for free. So you've got to break down the mindset for John and I. Again, I know you've said the name, but who did you work for free? And what the hell were you thinking?
So Joel Owens, I worked for him. So when I was, I had a rotational podcast that I would listen to on my commute into the city. And this was one of them. And a lot of the information I got from these podcasts are dangerous, honestly, because you listen to people who are doing what they really love to do, right? And
yeah.
And when you're not doing what you really love to do, you know, you think to yourself, I got to do that, right? Like I need to figure out how to do what these guys are doing, you know? And I couldn't get that out of my head. And then once you throw in Rich Dad Poor Dad, I knew I wasn't going to stay, right? So I forget, you know, where I heard it or read it, but it was, you know, adding value, bringing value to somebody. Yeah. And so that's what I wanted to do with Joel. I wanted to just help him first and then see where it goes from there. And that's what led to a full-time job with Joel.
Yeah. I mean, remembering Rich Dad, Poor Dad, one of the key principles that blows people's minds, and maybe they don't even pick up on it. Remember that expression in the book where he says, the rich do not work for money. But I don't know. This is a little quiz for both of you guys. Do you remember what he said they do work for?
It's something along the lines of for knowledge.
Yeah, they work to learn. They don't work to earn. They work to learn.
Right.
And, you know, that'll bend your mind for a while. That's where the terminology of capital hacking came from. It's like we have to kind of break some synapses to even see where capital gets built.
Right.
You know, John, you and I have been working on the concept of wealth internships. And that's what you did, Phil. You did what we call a wealth internship, not a job internship, but like you knew that person had some keys. They had some code breaks in the mental mapping of how capital gets created. And you said, well, I have time. I'm going to put some time in and I'm going to learn the code.
So how did that conversation go down, right? For our listeners, we want to give everybody tangible information that they can utilize right now. And so some of our listeners are hearing this and they have someone in mind and they're like, hey, you know, if I could only get in front of this guy or work for this guy, how did that conversation go down with Joel Owens, and how long did you work for free for him?
So he had a job posting up for about 8 or 9 months for director of acquisitions for a syndication. And I found myself clicking on it and reading that job description over and over. And I kept thinking to myself, oh, if I could do it over again, I would, you know, have a job like this. I would have done this. And at that time I was having my second son. We had just had him. So I had time off coming up. We got FMLA, we had 12 weeks off. So I just decided, I wrote him an email and I said, look, I got this time coming up. I see you have a job opening that you're hiring for. I said, let me do it for you for free and see what comes of it. And he responded and he had stuff for me to do right away. And that's how we got going. I just wanted to get involved as fast as I could.
John, I'll put a pin on this for stress. You know, you said podcasts were dangerous. And what it did was, you know, not Dale Carnegie, but Napoleon Hill says, as a man think, you know, I think and grow rich. You felt that the podcasts were showing you that other people are finding their passion and finding other ways to build capital in their lives. And it just wouldn't leave your mind. Isn't that the beginning of mindset? You know what I mean? That burden, that itch
right
in your mind became so tangible that you're like, I'm calling this guy.
Right.
And then it became so tangible. You're like, I'm putting time into this guy. So isn't it amazing? Those are the steps, John.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was, I love what you did there, Phil. And I wish that more people would do that, because they would follow their passions and the knowledge and what they can put out there in the universe. It would just compound so much faster.
Right. So
yeah, really. Yeah, I mean, thank you for that.
It's like when my supervisor was telling me to read the book, I was like, what is this, like a self-help book? Like I resisted it, you know, like and then once I read it, I realized that, you know, it can have such an impact on you. It's the same thing with like meetups, like this Learn and Grow thing that you guys have. I want to attend this year. But like, I always thought like, meetup, like, what am I going to learn? But now I realize the power of it, of getting around people who are doing the thing you want to do is very powerful.
Yeah. And speaking of meetups and especially Learn and Grow, it's all, what's cool about why you definitely need to be there, brother, is triple net is one of those things that people go through cycles of real estate investing, and triple net is probably on the horizon for a lot of people, especially if they own several highly intensive rentals and they're starting to say that I'm done with that part of my life. Triple net's a great option out, or, you know, we're passive investing in some other real estate deals like we do, but you start to meet the people. As a matter of fact, at a Learn and Grow about 5 years ago, one of our early investors with Accountable Equity, who put a lot of money in with us, left his big, he was a vice president of Verizon or something. And he kept saying he was going to find his active participation in real estate. You know, because what we do at Accountable Equity is passive. You get to own all the benefits, but not have to do the work. So he was willing to do some work. And he stumbled into the research on triple net and today has amassed a whole active portfolio of triple net. And I'm really grateful that he shared that with me at the last Learn and Grow. So, and all of that kind of came from meeting people and realizing that he wanted a balance of some passive things and some active things, but only so active. He's like, I only want it to be so active. And he's doing great with that.
No, it's incredible. Yeah. And Phil, as we start winding this up, triple N Invest. Do you guys teach others? It sounds like you guys come alongside of others that want to be investors and help them do this.
Yeah. So with our passive investors, we talk through strategies and what we're doing. I send monthly updates, just kind of, what we're doing and how we're looking at things. And then Joel is planning on having a net lease meetup for accredited investors and current investors somewhere around Atlanta, Georgia, where he lives. So that would be, teaching and learning about what we do and, how people can get involved.
Mm. And how do people connect with you, Phil? How do they find out more about the triple net lease?
Yeah, so you can go on nnninvest.com and there's a form there if you're interested in either owning a property directly to work with Joel or being a limited partner in one of our core plus or value add deals. Or they can email me directly at phil@nnninvest.com.
That was great, buddy. We look forward to getting you back and meeting you in person. And by the way, we buried the lead, Phil. We asked for investors like you who've joined us at Accountable Equity if they ever want to be on this show to reach out, and you did. And I think you joined us at Bohemia, correct? The newest one we just did?
And the debt fund, yes.
And the debt fund. Dude, thank you so much for taking us up on that invitation. Thank you for joining us as a partner, but also I truly appreciate when guys like you or ladies that would like to get on the show, reach out. It's awesome, buddy. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Bam, straight. We just got
buddy.
We got to the end of another great show. And everyone listening right now, you're the family. Family and friends, thanks for staying till the end.
That was so fun. And hey, hit the like, hit subscribe. We're here to serve you guys. That's why we're doing this show. Josh is not paying me. I'm doing this off of my quote unquote sweat equity because we want to make a difference in your life. And then that ripple effect will continue to touch the world.
Hey, amen, brother. Please check us out on capitalhacking.com, all the social media threads. And yes, I know you've probably already sent this episode to one of your best friends. Thank you. We love you. Just go right into your iPhone, hit the plus symbol. We'll talk to you later. See you next week.
Share, share, share.